Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
And here we are yet again on a Monday night, not Sunday. Hello, Robert.
Yes. Did you unmute me?
Yes, you are unmuted.
Okay. It's like unplugged for the musicians.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we are unplugged.
So here we are, the end of May.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's gone so fast.
I know. It's been so fast. I mean, I've only gained 20 pounds during this, you know, stay-at-home thing, so.
Yeah, really.
I'm kind of hoping for like another month.
So we're at the last, are we going to do fashion next Sunday?
Well, actually.
Or this week.
We have more fashion people coming along because technically next weekend is the end of May. Even though we're Memorial Day now, it's actually kind of fallen a week before. So we're going to do fashion, and we actually have we have two photographers that shoot fashion. David Anthony, that's in New York, and I'm gonna screw up his name. I think his name is Marty, but he's an Australian. So we're going to have a hard time finding that window of opportunity where both sides of the world are awake.
Yeah,
because he's like 9 hour difference. He's like close to, I think it's like Brisbane or something like that. He tried to explain it to me, but I couldn't understand through his accent. We may have to bring Colleen Brown on board so she can translate.
Well, that would just be too fun right there.
That'd be too fun. We wouldn't get a word in edgewise at all, I'm sure. Yeah. So talk about the whole stay-at-home thing. You know, in Oklahoma, are we open yet? Are we, like, fully open? Because it feels like we're fully open.
I honestly can't say because I haven't been paying attention. I don't listen to the news. I don't pay attention. I just kind of go with whatever is going on. Well, you tell me a lot, so I just go by what you say.
Downtown a lot, and it's packed.
Yeah.
It is completely packed. It is like the borders are open. The world is congregating at the park. Every photographer's got a senior. I mean, I had like 10 sessions this week. It's like insane.
That's awesome that you did. Hopefully everybody's healthy.
Well, yeah, everybody's healthy, at least for now. 2 weeks from now, we're dead. But no, I was trying to catch up on the seniors that were, basically canceled when we went under this COVID-19 stay-at-home thing.
Yeah.
So it's not really new work so much as catching up on old work. And I can't believe that we shut down mid-March. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mid-March. We're actually a little bit past mid-May.
We're at the end of May, yeah.
Like, what happened? Like, do you feel like you used your time wisely? Because I sure as hell don't.
Yeah, I worked.
Well, yeah, you were able to get some work in. I got some website stuff done. I got some educational stuff done. And, oh, my God, got a lot of stuff done around the house, cleaned the garage up. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, you were way more productive on the home front than I was. I didn't do hardly any. I did get my room straightened up, though, this weekend.
Finally. Oh, you did?
Yeah. It's way better. I even vacuumed the concrete floor.
The bedroom or the studio?
Bedroom.
The bedroom's cleaned up?
Yeah.
Are you expecting guests?
No, I was just tired of looking at it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were preparing for, you know, some kind of boudoir photo shoot or something.
Well, I wish.
Well, maybe the listeners will like chime in and send a boudoir shoot to Jim.
Okay.
I mean, at least maybe a manoir shoot.
No.
No? Okay. No. All right. I just want to double check and make sure that we had all that stuff settled in. So we should go ahead and bring our guest online, Jim. You want to introduce?
Yeah, let's do that. But before we do that.
Let's
do this.
This podcast was recorded on the Rodecaster Pro, the world's first fully integrated podcast production console. With 4 mic channels, 8 sound pads for triggering effects and music, the ability to bring in phone and Skype calls, and powerful onboard audio processing. It's the perfect solution whether you're just getting into podcasting or you're a seasoned pro.
Well, thank you, Rode.
Yeah. And
for contact, which all of a sudden I forgot his name. Oh, it's Ryan. Ryan White.
Yep.
Ryan White that lives just across the border in Arkansas.
Yep. Arkansas. Yep.
A month and a half. Check, make sure he's still alive.
So today, another fashion photographer, Mr. Craig Stidham. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. I'm glad to have you, especially in your condition. glad to be able to do this because I, you know, obviously didn't know you. Now I somewhat have met you. We're on Zoom doing a recording that way as well, but we are not using video. But anyway, yeah, I've looked at your website. I have not gotten to your Instagram yet. But so are you in Oklahoma?
No, sir. I'm in Texas.
You're in Texas. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Texas to be exact, right?
Yes, sir. Technically, we're 23 miles northeast of Amarillo, Texas. We have a ranch that we're out on. So with the video shut down, it's put us out here in the middle of nowhere.
You have a ranch?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, like, duh.
It's West Texas. It's not Dallas.
Okay. So everybody in Texas got a ranch. It's good to know.
Well, you know, people out here do. Anyway.
So you have would you say your Instagram is more up to date than your website?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, Instagram's so fun just to, you know, get something that's retouched and, you know, post it up, you know, PDQ, where the website, you have to actually sit down at a computer to update that. So,
well, we will have his name and Instagram link and all that in the show notes. But if you want to, while you're listening, go, well, I guess you can see it on the show notes anyway. So go look at his website and his Instagram while we're talking.
Yeah, I try to keep everything pretty simple. It's just Craig Stidham.
So. Yeah. Right.
Only thing I don't have is a Facebook. I mean, I have a personal Facebook, and I'm not very good at, you know, friend request response or anything like that. So it's just basically to keep in touch with family and stuff. So I ask, don't send me a friend request. I probably won't ever get to it. And I don't have a business on Facebook because it's Facebook. It's Facebook.
I sometimes wonder if I should even have it because I don't really get a whole lot of stuff from that. I get more interaction with Instagram.
Well, I had a Facebook website many moons ago, and this local photographer decided she needed – it was a girl, and I'm not making that up because we all class action lawsuit her, so we knew exactly who it was. But she decided she was going to pay some – anonymous person that wasn't very anonymous to go on to our area and talk trash and leave bad reviews on our business page, which is so unprofessional. The problem was it was so easy to track because the person she hired to do so basically copy and pasted it amongst every single photographer. So when the judge saw it, he was just all like, that's it. You know, like, you're toast. And, you know, but Facebook being Facebook basically said, you know, that you have to submit a claim and they'll get to it. And so we were just like, well, screw that. We just killed Facebook altogether. So I haven't been on Facebook in many years because of it. So,
yeah, I don't blame you.
Wow. Yeah. You know, talking about that, Craig, I'm on your Instagram right now.
Yes, sir.
And what I'm finding interesting, and this is a question that has come up before with other photographers, and you're a commercial photographer that shoots in a fashion style and also shoots fashion.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if I'm wrong, okay, I'm good. One thing that has come up before in the past is watermarking your images on Instagram or social media. And for a while, I watermarked everything. And then I just got a little lazy. It's like, who cares? If they're going to steal it, they're going to steal it anyway. And a watermark is not going to make someone go look. I like how you have your copyright name on the outside of the image. So you're basically using a white border when you're uploading.
Yeah, so that's just something I just made a Photoshop action. So when I'm, you know, when I'm done and it's retouched, you obviously, you know, Control S, save the high resolution. And then I have my F1 key set. So I hit F1 and it takes my high resolution, scales it, puts that border stroke, puts my name in the exact same spot, rotates it the whole nine yards. And so, anyway, so it's basically like a preset and it just, and it does. A highly respected photographer, Melissa Rodwall, she once said that, you know, if you're going to put your logo on your image, same thing, who really gives a crap? I mean, if somebody looks at that image and goes, oh, that's a great image, who is the photographer? They're going to do the research to figure it out, or your style should speak for you. And so for a while there, I got really, I don't know, butthurt, or, you know, just didn't really care for photographers putting some big fancy logo across their images. It was destroying the image, you know? And then I ran into somebody who said, you know, it took me like 5 links and 20 minutes to figure out that you took that picture. And so then I kind of went back to, okay, I'm just going to make it small and simple and not destructive to the image and just put it along the side here. And I've been doing it ever since, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely,
I guess,
different.
It comes down to personal preference.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna copy that, because
you wouldn't be the first one.
I'm gonna just tell you flat honest, I'm gonna copy it. But it really looks it looks professional, it's clean, you know, it has a modern feel to it, and it also has a tear sheet.
Oh goodness. That would be Robert.
Robert.
Oh, you're talking about the dogs?
Oh, okay.
Those are my big dogs. Sorry, somebody.
No, it's okay. Hey, it's no big deal. We're laid back. This is a coffee shop.
Yeah,
chat right
I can't
here.
Believe you actually heard him. I'm in like the very, very back of the house too.
I'm well, serious. You need to go to his Instagram, because I'm really digging.
Well, I've seen it. Yeah, it's really good. But what I was going to say is, you really wouldn't want to do a black background, because if you've got a dark image, it's not going to look that good. It's going to kind of blend. So
my thoughts were, to be honest with you, it's just kind of basically back to when we all used to print on like fiber-based paper. You know, an 8x10 never fit on a piece of paper. You always had to, you know, we were always big into carving out the negative carriers to brag and put the full frame mark on it. Remember all that?
Yeah.
So this is kind of my, what do you call it, growth in the digital, but still maintaining my roots as far as a chemical photographer.
I like it. I'm everything's nice and clean. Maybe you could put some sloppy borders on a couple of them. Just
yeah.
So I see early on you had a black border and your name was inside, and you changed it from that to the outside. Looks like.
Yeah, for everybody who knows me and for those that don't, one of my favorite quotes to say in life is photography should be an evolution of change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're not growing and changing and messing stuff up, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I keep thinking I'm going to change my logo, but I kind of like it. So I'm not going to, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I actually have changed it. I changed the name and I changed it a little bit recently. But anyway,
you know, it's kind of like priceless. Mm-hmm. I find that when I, you know, mentor and help out other photographers, you know, they will print 500 priceless, and then they'll find out, you know, real short that in the third sell session or whatever, that priceless didn't work, but they don't want to change the price to make it work because they've got, you know, 500 sheets invested, and yeah. It's like, hello.
Yeah, that's why I don't print priceless.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, if you're going to print them and you're going to make them nice and beautiful, by all means, do it. Just maybe a dozen.
Right.
You know, so don't be glued to your price list. You know, change that thing. If it's not working, change it. I mean, there was a time period, I guarantee you, I was changing it every night because I had a new sales meeting. I tried to want to, you know, one up or better my odds or, you know, find something that was a little bit more fluent. And so I was changing it every night. My wife was like, what are you doing? I'm changing my price list. Don't bother me real quick. And oh my God, again, you know?
Yeah. I guess I take that back. I did print some headshot brochures that has pricing in it, but I think I did 15 or 20. I didn't, you know, I'm not looking to do that. So
yeah.
Anyway, so like you're commercial fashion.
Yes.
And do you travel?
People will see a ton.
Okay.
I'm going to clarify. People will see some senior work that pops up on my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sorry, I'm from Texas. I'm a Republican. You can hate if you want. But when Obama crashed 2008 and the industry crashed, we all had to kind of pick things up. So for me, shooting seniors is mad money. It helps me buy new lenses, new gear. It keeps my brain focused because if you bounce between one major commercial job and then you go to another commercial job, you know, that could be 2 or 3 weeks between work, which is completely fine because you make a ton of money doing it. But in those 2 weeks, why not keep shooting, you know?
Yeah.
So you'll see a mixture of stuff, and that's just kind of what I'm. So if people are like, well, this guy does this and he shoots seniors, you're like, yeah, because it keeps me busy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm looking at your seniors right now, and shit, Craig, this stuff looks like fashion, dude. I mean, this is
Of course it does.
Yeah. That's because I was classically trained in the fashion industry. So what I mean by that is basically we'll just put it this way. When I was in high school, I was a big time screw up. I actually got kicked out of art. We won't get into that. Yeah, we won't get into that story, but I got actually kicked out of art. I'm Catholic. So here's my little 2 cents on if God doesn't work in mysterious ways, you're screwed in the head, because I got kicked out of art. So to graduate, I had to finish my art credit. And guess what the only class available was?
Photography.
Exactly. So not only did I screw up in that class, the teacher made a deal. She said, here's a syllabus, and we're going to make 10 images at the end of the year or by this particular deadline. You know, if I like one image, you get a 10 for the year. I'm like, done. So she never bothered me and I never bothered her. And a creative person will never sit still. And so I was off and running doing my own thing. Long story short, I didn't know it, but my 10 images were the submission requirements to the Art Institute of Houston. And so I ended up winning a full scholarship to the Art Institute.
Whoa.
And then while at the Art Institute, I won the Nikon scholarship. I won the Hasselblad scholarship, which if anybody knows Tony Corbell, he's the guy that actually handed me my scholarship.
Wow.
Years ago. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. After winning the Hasselblad scholarship, I won the UT art scholarship, ended up going to UT, got my master's.
That is an incredible story. Wow.
So, oh my God, dude, that's nuts. Like I love Corbell.
Yeah. So Tony Corbell and I were teaching one time and he kept giving me that weird evil eye, and it wasn't the evil eye of hatred. It was the evil eye of curiosity. And when we were done teaching, he goes, you look really familiar. And I go, yeah, so do you, but I can't place it. And he goes, well, I used to be a representative for Hasselblad. And I said, were you ever in Houston? He was like, oh my God, that was my area. Like I was in there all the time. I said, well, when I was a kid, I won the Hasselblad scholarship. And he would have been like, I knew it. That's where you were at. And then he finally told me that a couple of my images that he had personally looked over my, what do you call it, portfolio for the scholarship. He looked at a couple of those images and were just really taken away. So he put in his own 2 cents and he voted for my images. And I never met him. So
that's incredible.
You know. Yeah. So years later, we've just had a connection. We've always been, you know, super good friends and stuff. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, you know that we claim him now in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. It had to do with a woman because that's the only reason why he would have left Texas.
Yeah. We'll take whatever. You know, and Tony Corbell, I, you know, have known him for a while and, you know, I've ran into him a couple of times speaking on stores in Texas, and I was chit-chatting with him one time in between classes, And he made a comment about like, well, where did you learn like your lighting stuff? I was like, dude, Dean Collins, because everybody wanted to be a commercial photographer and Dean Collins did. And then Tony says, I wrote all that stuff for Dean. I'm like, bullshit, you're out of your mind. And then I started looking at some of the fine art series videos and he's in the background.
Yes. Yeah. That's crazy. So, I actually got to do with Dean Collins, and I did a deal with Monty Zucker one time also. So bringing back the royalty of photography. And then I have to say that I actually got to do a PPA event where no, it wasn't PPA. It was WPPI, excuse me. Bambi Cantrell, the queen of photography, was there. And Bambi and I got to pretty much hit it off within 5 minutes. And I looked at her, it was really funny. And I said, I like your dress that her model was wearing. I do fashion. I was like, what to say you and me go get into trouble. And she was like, I'm down. And we took off and we stopped WPPI in their tracks, held up the massive escalator to do this fashion shoot on. And these WPPI event staff people had come over and they were like, excuse me, you guys, but you're holding up traffic and you can't do this. And we're going to have to ask you to assist and assist. Bambi looked at him. She was like, I'm Bam. Go away. And they did. I was all like, we love you. Bam and I, we ended up walking around for a couple days shooting and hanging out and have been pretty good friends. She's been a total mentor and support, and you can't say enough for Bam. And
oh my God, that dude, you're like bringing back like childhood memories of mine when you're mentioning these names. It's like it's taking me right back to college, you know?
Yeah.
But that back then photography was more magical. Like you had to be a pro. You had to know what you were doing.
Right.
Because it was film. There was no preview. You had to use a light meter every time you did your light checks.
Oh, I still carry one on my hip.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm sure Terry has told you that. Like, we have a light meter in all of our bags.
Yes.
So was Terry your wrangler at a class? Okay, I thought that's what I heard or something, but okay. I knew that she knew you, but I didn't know if it was a Wrangler thing. Cool. Well, I'm trying to go through your bio here on your website, but you pretty much have said all of this.
Yeah. I don't know if you considered accomplished a lot or a little, but
I would say you've accomplished quite a bit here, buddy. You would say what, so, Robert?
I'd say a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote a book. It was called The Dynamic Posing Guide. It sold at Amazon. I sold over 10,000 copies in 3 days. I was pretty proud of that. And now I have a new book. It's more like just a lighting diagram book. It was to help new photographers or people who wanted to get out of a rut. And you can buy that off my website also.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to put a note here on the show notes so we make sure we get that.
So I like what it says here. Craig has an open house attitude, always willing to take time for others and answer questions for those who call. That's cool. I like it.
Yeah. So the big project right now is getting everybody switched over from Adobe Lightroom to Capture One Pro.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Since you just brought that up.
Okay, let's do it.
So I switched to Fuji full-time about a year and a half ago.
Right.
I just wasn't thrilled with the way Lightroom was handling my color in the camera. So, and plus we had some kind of worm issue with the raw files. And I switched to Capture One. And, of course, you know, Terry was kind of giving me some feedback on how to use it based on what you had done in class. And so this beginning of the year, I switched to Capture One Pro full time. I have not been in Lightroom, and I'm finally starting to get fast enough in it to do production work, because normally it would take me forever. But why does that program run so fast?
Well, so I'm part of the Capture One team. Thank goodness, you know, so we get to have, meetings and Skype stuff with Capture One in Switzerland and get to talk to brilliant photographers from all over. I'm not a software engineer, and if I say something and it's not right, don't quote me on it. I'm just trying to maybe give an educated guess, okay?
Okay.
So the first part on Lightroom is no matter what camera you use, Adobe being Adobe, I think they were what's that word? Arrogant. I thought Adobe was very arrogant when they made Lightroom. And from my understanding, now this is my understanding of this, okay? So don't send me hate emails or corrections because I don't care. But my understanding is Adobe decided that they weren't actually going to pay like Nikon or Canon or the other camera manufacturers for their ICC profiles, like their exact color renditioning. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, like, when you load a Canon or you load a Nikon, it defaults to RGB or sRGB, like Adobe 1998 color space. So basically, no matter what you have, I shoot Nikon. So let's just say I shoot Nikon, and my Nikon says, hey, my color red, it's like Ferrari red, needs this number. Well, as soon as you load it into Adobe, it says, hey, we think Ferrari red is this number, so they switch it to that next number. Where in Capture One, you can legitimately dial in your camera. So your Fuji camera, you can actually go to the ICC, you know, the basic ICC characteristics, you know, profile, and you can dial in your Fuji camera. And not only that, but you can dial in what mode you're shooting that Fuji camera in, because Capture One paid for all that, you know. So, you know, people look at me and they look at my images, and the first thing they say is, man, your skin tones are amazing, because I shoot Capture One. That it's that simple. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I use my Nikon. I dial in my Nikon. If I shoot it in normal mode or portrait mode, I dial that in, and boom, it's neutralized almost right there on the spot. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
You know,
so hang on.
Okay. So that's the color. So why does it run so fast? Well, with Adobe, you could have 20 clients in one catalog. So you could have 100,000 images, and Adobe's going to push all 100,000 images. Mm-hmm. Where with Capture One, it's one catalog per client. So if you only shoot 200 images, then you're only pushing those 200 images.
You're talking about the difference between catalog and sessions?
No, just catalog to like Adobe Lightroom catalog to Capture One catalog. So if you want to talk about the difference between a session and a catalog, again, my main understanding here, okay, is catalogs are really good for if you shoot on a flash drive, say you're out on location, you shoot on a flash drive, you come home, you put the flash drive in your computer, you use a catalog.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm at the studio, I have another Mac and a portable hard drive I take back and forth between the house and the studio. Either way, but you launch a session and the tethering software becomes more stable. So, you know, if you're going to tether your studio into the Mac, so it's real time, you shoot, it pops up, then you're shooting a session.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sessions, whenever we do event photography using Capture One, and I have to
yes.
say, compared to Lightroom, holy moly, it is bread and butter simple. If the cord gets unplugged, you just plug it back in, fire the camera once, you're connected.
Yeah. The other thing that I love about the tethering is so stable is if you actually spend about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes on your, quote, test shot,
mm-hmm.
then the rest of your day is butter. Because we shoot a gray card. And in Capture One, and there's that, it's called Normalize.
Yeah.
It's a tool called Normalize. And if you actually custom pick your normalization and you type in the numbers 128, 128, 128, so your RGB values are 128, it will mysteriously default to 127, but just leave it. And you shoot a gray card and then you normalize your gray card. Not only can you normalize the white balance, ambient light, and exposure to be absolutely perfect, but you can normalize that, and then adjust your skin tones depending on what, you know, color you might need, just a little here, a little there, and then copy that setting. So every time you shoot a new picture, those settings are dialed in automatically. So at the end of the day, you're done.
And so that's based on that session.
Yes, based on that session or that space. So, for instance, I had to do an office where I went from like the third floor of this building to the, you know, ninth floor of another building. And when I got to the ninth floor, we had more window light. And so my bottom floor adjustments didn't work on my top floor. So I just basically had the client like, can you give me just 2 seconds? Here's a gray card, yada, yada, click, click, click. Done. And then I shot everybody on that floor and used that setting. And it was, you know, when I got home, I was done.
Huh. Wow.
Pop Cerveza and back it up, you know?
Okay. Ooh, I like that. So I was using, I tried using it and I didn't because I'm very, you know, doing a lot of work and I didn't want to try to learn something new. But I mean, there's a ton of resources for Lightroom. I know there's YouTube, but is there a place to go and do like a course, not necessarily an in-person, but some place that's something like Creative Live or something like that?
There's some people out there that do stuff like that. YouTube University is not always the best.
Yeah.
But Capture One's own support videos are amazing. I mean, they've got people out there that'll answer anything out there. You know, any question you have will be out there, and there's already videos. So basically you just go to captureone.com. At the very top, it'll say support, or I think the new website says resource center. And that lists like every sponsored Capture One video. So, you know, it's right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a video in there that if you do a search, it's called The Perfect Skin Tone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Damn. I mean, that video right there, I always direct every new person. I'm like, have you watched this video yet? No. Then don't call me. Go watch this video.
Wow. Well, yeah, just listen to the details and the technical stuff you're talking about has sparked my interest again because I love the sound of that. Because I also shoot Fuji. I still have Nikon, but I do headshots with that right now. But, I mean, just the stuff you've said specifically about the gray card and having it set and set it and forget it kind of thing. You know, that sounds really
cool. And it's that cool. It's that normalized tool. People will look at it and go, normalize? I don't know what that is. So they don't ever read about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to be honest with you, I would have probably skipped it myself. But, you know, I've got Capture One software engineers basically saying, hey, we've created this new tool. Here's how you use it. And you go, oh.
So the normalize is basically just to normalize your color, your white balance, or
you can pick it. You can pick white balance only. You can pick white balance exposure, or you can pick just exposure.
Okay.
So here's a good one. So I have I think it's 25 feet by 20 foot cycloric wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, floor, ceilings, left, right. It's a big right angle. Mm-hmm. And it's a white wall. And if I want a pure white wall, then I can shoot shoot into Capture One, and I get that kind of faint gray line between pure white and my wall, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when you're tethering, you can shoot and go, okay, all my skin detail is there. My highlights are there. I'm not blowing out. And then what I can do is go to the normalize, type in 245, which is white with detail. In like zone system photography for digital, but the number 245 is white with detail. In other words, it's going to print so close to paper-based white that, you know, Ansel Adams would have called that zone nine, you know? Okay. And so anyway, but you can put in 245 and then roll your cursor on that white wall. And when you hit something that's like 241, 242, then you just normalize that and it will take all the color out of that highlight and drop that to 245.
Hmm.
I mean, like you said, click and forget.
Yeah.
You know, and then make sure you copy that so that when you're doing that entire segment on a white wall that, you know, you're up and running. So one of the commercial jobs that we shoot is Marcella Furs. She makes billboards, advertising, magazine, like national magazine ads. You know, we'll shoot millions of dollars in fur coats. And her campaign has always been on these weird colors. We finally convinced her a couple years back that she needs to shoot on pure white because it's so classy and the color of the coats and the texture will pop out. That was something I totally regretted in my life because, you know, trying to do a pure white commercial job and have to edit out the fine details between fur, that could really cause you nightmares. You know what I mean? Right about that time, Capture One came out with the normalized. I hit 245, clicked that white wall, bam, every single time. Pure white and texture and detail, you know? So that's, I mean, you can totally use it in your, in anything, you know?
Yeah. Well, we honestly didn't want, it's great to hear the Capture One stuff, because we could talk about that forever. But
yeah, totally.
It turned into a Capture One episode, but this is a fashion. No, you're
topics.
Good. You're
yeah.
good.
Change topics.
Fashion, you know, is our monthly thing for May. And So let's talk a little bit more about the fashion.
Let's talk about this because let's let the listeners in on what's happening here. Okay, because you know Melissa, actually Jim is also in that Fashion Connect Facebook group that Melissa has during this whole shutdown. And being in Oklahoma, I would like to shoot fashion. And honestly, Craig, I don't know shit about it. That's the truth. I just want to shoot pretty things, wearing pretty clothes, and make a shit thing. Okay?
It works.
Well, for you, it works. Every time I even mention the thing that I'm in Oklahoma, they're like, there's no fashion industry in there. You're in Amarillo. That's not that far up a step from Oklahoma City.
No, 3 hours to be exact.
Yeah, so how are you making fashion happen in Amarillo, Texas?
It travels.
Yeah, so you got to keep in mind, too, that we moved here. We're transients. We're actually from the San Antonio-Houston area. So when I was meeting art directors and getting busy in the world of fashion, we were in Houston.
Okay.
So my wife ended up going to Texas Tech Medical way up here. And then, you know, basically it doesn't take you any time to get somewhere. So as long as we got an airport, I could fly out. You got to keep in mind too, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So with that kind of experience, I do get some, you know, pull with, you know, hey, if you want to save a couple thousand dollars, you come to my place, you know,
right.
In this day and age, we're not full of, you know, pack everything up. We're going to Tahiti. It's, you know, we need to cut corners where we can. And so it's easier, say, for instance, for the fur companies that come out of Canada, it's cheaper for them to drive a truck of furs down to me than it is to get me and my crew geared up and fly out to them.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that before. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that, actually, you know?
Yeah.
Huh. But fortunately, you've got the big studio and you've got the facility to do that, which you're the man. So,
but I built my studio for it.
Okay, that was smart.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we had a place, it was working, and when it didn't work anymore and it was time to move, we just decided, okay, what works and what doesn't, and what do we need to do to fix it? So I'm kind of on my third studio.
Mm. Wow. Oh, okay.
Did they all have the psych wall?
No.
Okay.
No, the second studio didn't have a psych because the landlord that we were renting the building from didn't want us to put one up, and he thought it would be too permanent and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah. That's when we decided we're going to build one, and we're going to build a big one.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about the studio space. So I imagine that you can do fashion related editorials or shoots without a studio, but you're commercial type studio where you're shooting the lookbooks, you're shooting the catalog work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if a photographer, new photographer, let's say like me, decide to build a studio and have it geared towards fashion commercial type work, What kind of tips can you give me to get that started? I mean, you know, should everything be painted white? Should it be painted gray, black?
So when it came time for us to build our studio, you know, we did a ton of research, just went to a bunch of friends' place and that kind of stuff. And the number one thing I can tell you is have it bare. We basically have 1 8-foot folding table that we keep stuff on. And other than that, there's no furniture in our area.
What about storage?
No, well, we got 2 big vaults and we got a back area, but the shooting area is 45 feet square. It's a, literally a square, and we have 15-foot ceilings. And so then we have, like I said, the 90-degree wall. The ceilings are black. The walls are gray. The floor is hard. And, you know, when you got a, when you want to put up an 8-foot butterfly to make a, like a large fill light source, and then, you know, have a, like a coffee can on a boom. If you're rolling the boom around, you're going to whack something. So a bare studio is a working studio. It might not be the prettiest, sexiest thing on the planet, but you're able to pick things up, move it out of the way, get back to work without, you know, running into stuff, leaning it up against stuff, you know, always tripping on stuff. Cables are the worst, you know? So yeah. So when we redid the floor, before we put the nice floor down, we put electrical sockets in the floors.
Are you using any hanging lights from the ceiling?
No, tracks? We had those in the, we had those in the first one, and I found that I was getting really lazy. And so we went back. We would always use like the same lighting with the same modifiers.
So you've got stands all over the place that you're using.
Okay.
Well, that's, that makes sense.
I've never really thought about that when you said a bare studio with nothing in it. I mean, yeah, it doesn't look pretty, but it's not designed to look pretty. It's designed to get shit done.
Probably looks a lot prettier than mine, like all the shit all over the place.
Well, and we had pictures on the walls too, just to try to make things a little nicer. And my softboxes on the boom stands, it's like, okay, I want to, we got a few more minutes. Let's get this job done. I'll just change this light over real fast. So I just pushed the boom and the box out of the way. Sure enough, the box would hit the wall, touch the light or the piece of work, it would fall to the floor. You're like, dang it, you know? So it's just better not to have anything in it.
Wow. I'm just shocked on that.
That, so, that makes it a hell of a lot easier, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes.
And it makes some sense.
Yeah. And we've got a, we've got one of those 27 inch Macs, you know, like a desktop Mac on a rolling cart.
Oh, that's cool. For your tether. With the,
So, you know, if wherever we need to go, if the computer is not where it needs to be, it can get there.
Well, in my mind, what I'm envisioning, it looks pretty damn cool, you know? So, I remember a studio we went to a while back in Norman, and it's no longer, but it was a very cool studio. It was similar to that, I would imagine, but he did have a lot of gear in there. But you got to have a place to have your gear, but it was very meticulously stored. Everything had a place. But do you have
the only thing meticulously stored in my studio are the backgrounds.
Yeah. So and they're all just on rolls.
No, no, we do them, one paper red at a time. I know that sounds like, oh, you could do better than that, but it keeps me from being that lazy guy, you know?
So you put up one paper roll at a time.
Yes.
And they're all stored vertically?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Savage Universal is the people we use for our backgrounds. They're amazing. Their papers are amazing. I mean, you can't say enough good things about their papers.
Yeah.
And their blue logo in the center of their box, if you just take a regular knife and cut out that blue logo, you can put your papers back in the box, and then you actually can see what color in the box without having to read and find where that white piece of paper is.
Well, that's pretty smart. Wow, look at you.
Yeah.
So do you have an office area or like a viewing area, or you just do it all in there?
We just do it all in the big empty room. We had a place in the ceiling where you could take a, you know, a projection, projector, mm-hmm. Hook it up to the Mac, you know, do a show or a party or whatever. And we would literally just screw the projection back into the ceiling. So we could take it down when we're not using it and put it back up when we are using it. Mm-hmm. And then we would just show like client work or do a reveal or whatever, right on the psych wall. So
that's cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
And that's not at this current studio?
No, we could still do it here.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really cool. So now, Robert, all we got to do is find we got to find you a big warehouse, and then you could do that.
Now, see, in Houston, we had a big warehouse. Like, three photographers would share a warehouse, and it would have, like, you know, a boardroom office, and then, like, two of us shared an office, and then the main guy had his own office, but it had, like, a kitchen, and then, you know, you could have two photographers working at two times. I always wanted something like that, but, you know, to be honest, nobody ever wants to partner up with me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you probably don't rent out your studio, right?
No. Oddly enough, if somebody asked, though, you know, we'll case all my gear and put it in the vault, and, you know, they're more than welcome to use it. Mm-hmm. I've always had this attitude of a photographer is making money, then photography in general is making money.
I like that.
So, yeah.
Well, that's cool because, you know, at least you're putting up your gear and stuff, and they can bring their own.
Yeah, I mean, you bring your own gear. If somebody's all like, can I borrow your gear? That, you know, it goes to no real fast.
Right.
Just our gear is just too expensive, you know? Yeah. So, I do actually have some college kids that will reach out and say, you know, hey, can we be a fly on the wall during a photo shoot? And, you know, they make the mistake of going like, oh, we go to the local college, you know, we'd love to see what you do. And I always turn that around on them and say, how about you, you know, organize a photo shoot. You can host it at my place, use your own gear, and I'll be a fly on the wall in your studio. And when I feel you need some help, I'll jump in, you know? Mm-hmm. So it kind of turns the tables to, I'm not going to teach you for free. However, right. I have no problems looking over your shoulder and going, there's an easier way to do that.
Right.
So.
Robert, are you taking notes?
Yes, he is.
Oh, hello, Terry.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing good. What's up, girl?
Was it like WWE wrestling, the tap out, you know?
He had. Yeah.
So he's like, Terry, come here. I'm like, what?
Well, Robert's cool. Voice got real high for a second.
Yeah. So this is Terry Treyway, Robert's wife, in case you didn't know. She's been on the show several times.
But you're good. Yeah. So, yeah, I've known Craig for a while, watched him for a long while.
So go ahead, Terry. Go with it.
Go with what?
I don't know. Go.
Because I was his wrangler at Texas school. Not this year. It was canceled, so I didn't last year. And kind of opened my eyes to a whole bunch of different avenues for senior photography in general that not everybody's doing, you know, and in a genre that's oversaturated, and it's going to continue to be oversaturated.
I think the Texas school, the one that sticks out to me that blew everybody's minds was using that young lady that we called in at the, you know, at the very last second and walked her up and down the pool and with the dress and everything. That was...
I'm telling you, and it, no, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that was teaching her catwalk in like 2 seconds flat and showing, which was really humorous, but worked like a champ, just saying.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do to get the shot, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Are you So I guess Terry, he was teaching the whole fashion look with the seniors.
Fashion forward or something like that, but it was of his background in the industry and how he's using it for his seniors today. And it, if you haven't checked out his portfolios on Instagram and Facebook, and you are looking for a different avenue for your senior photography, then you need to follow him hands down. And he also introduced me to Capture One CP1, which is, I guess, Capture Pro 20 now. Have they done the new release yet? Yes, is a game changer, hands down. And he's like my expert on it. Hey, I got a question for you on this. Can you do this in this program? He's like, yeah, that's how you do it. So
yeah.
Yeah. He's my like own personal, like, you know, when I have an issue, can this be done? Yeah. Let me see if I can figure it out. So then his, if you haven't seen his retouching, that's something you guys should discuss, because it's really, really, really good. So anyway, Robert's back now. He had to go to the bathroom, but he's back. So I'm going to tap out. So I'll see you guys later. Hang on.
Asta.
So back to Capture One, just 1 second. I got to ask this question. So
okay.
I use Lightroom a lot because I shoot real estate, and it's very, well, you know what I'm talking about. So I do a lot of copy, like auto syncing. Uh-huh. And so I know in Capture One, it's a little different, or if it's even available. Like when I'm editing some of the range of images, I can tweak the exposure and the contrast and that kind of stuff, and it affects all those images that are selected. What happens in Capture One in that instance?
Exactly the same thing.
Really?
Let's just say you're going to do like the master bedroom. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter what angle, but the light and everything mm-hmm. was about the same, sure. You know? So you could tweak your first image. You could do one of two things. You can tweak your first image, go up in the very top right corner, you'll see an up arrow and a down arrow. Mm-hmm. You click the copy arrow, and then hold the shift and select, you know, the next 10 images, and then hold shift and hit the down arrow. It's the shift button. I don't know why they switched it. It used to just be the button, but now you got to hold shift and click the paste button, mm-hmm. and it will take all those adjustments and paste it all the way down.
Okay.
Or you could select all 10 images, and when you do an exposure, it'll automatically, while you have 10 images selected, if you change the exposure, it will change it on all 10 images at the same time.
Now, is that a setting, or is that a keystroke, or is just while you have them selected?
While you have them selected, you know, you just bring them up 1, 2, 3, right?
Huh. Yeah.
It'll do those three at the exact same time, or like, which is the way I work. I will alter my first image and get it kind of where I wanted, and then copy it, select the next images, and paste them back down again.
Hmm. So is that a command C and a command V kind of thing? Because I'm
no, it, you have to
you
use
have to the, use the buttons.
You have to use the up and down buttons. The reason why you have to do that is because Capture One, let's just say, for instance, in Lightroom, if you copy all your settings, including the crop, it's going to paste the crop across your images, right?
Right. If you have that selected.
Right.
Yeah.
So in Capture One, you can crop your first one and then go, dadgummit, I didn't want to do that. So then you can copy everything but the crop, and then paste it all down again. So there's multiple ways to skin a cat.
Huh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I do it, Shift-Command-C to copy, and then Shift-Command-V to paste.
Oh, on
Capture
One?
Yeah, I don't think that works in... Does that work in Capture One?
It worked today.
Oh, nice. Okay. I've always been told you have to do the arrows, so...
Oh, well, I don't... Maybe there's something that I'm missing when I do that.
I don't know. I mean, but I do know that there's more than one way to skin a cat in Capture One, just like with any other.
Well, the one thing that impressed me the most, and obviously, you know, different raw converters and post-processing your images, there's pluses and minuses to every program out there.
Guaranteed. One
that really impressed me about Capture One off the bat is the ability that it keeps my camera adjustments when it imports. So my Fuji, if I shoot in a certain film simulation and it's either dark, light, or whatever, it comes in that way. It doesn't reset all of my raw settings to zero the way Lightroom did. It'd come in and look kind of nice for a second, then it would render and everything would go flat, no contrast.
Got you. Yeah. So for me, I made a preset. It's just called Craig's Basic Preset. And it dials in like my lens profile, my ICC profile, my red, orange, yellow shift, It takes away the noise, adds just a little bit of sharpness, like 2 on clarity, 12 on structure, like all those little things, you know what I mean? And when I go to import my images, then I can say I want to use the basic import, and it will do that to every image. So it takes all that, what do you call it? Wasted time. Yeah, I was trying to repetitive time, you know. It takes it all out when it just imports it. It just does it immediately. Yeah. So,
wow.
So, okay. One more question. So it doesn't have a merge brackets feature, right? Because I shoot brackets, and I think probably my real estate will have to stay in Lightroom, and if I do any other stuff, I'll use Capture One.
Now, are you talking about like merging into like an HDR?
Yes.
Okay. So with Capture One, there's a plugin that comes with Capture One. You just have to go under the preferences, your preferences, and activate the plugin. Uh-huh. And so once you do that, you can activate like Photoshop, Lightroom, but you can also do like Silver Effects, HDR, like mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you could take and select, say, if you have one image, four brackets. Mm-hmm. You select all four, right click or other click, and then it'll bring up, do you want to export? And you say export the variant, but then it'll also give you the option to edit or open with. And if you do edit in, then you could select like Silver Effects HDR. So it goes straight from raw to raw in HDR, and then it gives you that ability to just export the data straight across. And it's a turnkey software, so when you're done with the HDR, it comes back as like a Photoshop file back into Capture One. So then you can still make the adjustments, kind of like smart right. layers.
Yeah. That's exactly what Lightroom does, but Lightroom now has its own built-in merge, which I really like it because it's very natural, but there's another plugin that I use. It's called Lightroom Infuse. It's a third party plugin and it's very natural. I don't like any of the third party.
Yeah, if that infuses in your applications folder, I bet you money you can set Capture One to use that same plugin.
Well, yeah, Lightroom Infuse is just a plugin for Lightroom. It's not a separate app that you can run.
Oh, got you.
Yeah,
okay.
There
okay.
is HDR Effects, which is the Google thing, I think.
It used to be Silver or. Wasn't it Silver? No, not Silver.
No, Silver was the black and white.
Nick.
Yeah, Nick software. Yes, yeah, right.
Yes, Nick's HDR. Yeah, uh-huh. So you can, Capture One will run through all the Nick software, Alien Skin. It'll even, for, I think Terry was saying he does event photography. So let's just say you do an event and you want to be a, you know, shoot, edit, burn, and forget. You can even, when you're exporting that event, just export it straight into portraiture and then save it as a JPEG. So you go from Capture One to your hard drive, and it, when it exports, will run through portraiture automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they've done pretty good with third-party stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Set for to export it, merges all of them, puts it in Aurora HDR.
Yes. Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about it. I've got Aurora as well. But again, those third-party apps, that they don't have the – they don't. I know you can slide the sliders and make it look natural, but there's just something right. different about the way it does. But anyway, that's something I'll play with later, and that's enough Capture One talk, I guess. We've been talking for like an hour now.
Oh, I know.
Sorry.
Don't apologize. It's all good stuff. We that's why we do this podcast, because it's for us. We get to learn more than the listeners. So
so let's bounce this back. Maybe the listeners will cue back in again or something, you know. But we were talking about fashion early in the pre-show. You guys were asking me something, and I'll just, hopefully we can steer this in a different direction. But we were talking about, you know, how do I feel about, you know, strobe light, natural light, you know, that kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And so
what are you going to advise them to work on? What kind of skill levels do the new photographers need to be able to make it in this industry?
So a ton of editorial work can all be done with natural light or available light photography. So I truly think one needs to have a good amount of skills there.
Mm-hmm.
However, also editorial, but where the money's at is like catalog, you know, product photography. And you definitely have to learn how to fine tune your lighting and your strobes, especially your ratios. So my advice is same thing I did personally, okay, was I would say that I was really, really good at studio work using studio lighting and modifiers. And where I was lacking was shooting 100% natural light. And now I'm not talking about, you know, using lighting outside or supplementing lighting outside. I'm talking like one camera, one lens, and one flash card. Like no, not even a foam board, you know?
Wow, that sounds like a class, Greg. Do you have that set up?
We will have our May workshops return probably next May. So if that's something somebody's interested, by all means, hit me up. I'll give you information on it. But back to, you know, doing something is wherever you feel your weaknesses, that's what you need to work on. Because if you're not an all-around, you know, seasoned professional with whatever comes at you, I could see you having some problems, you know?
Yeah.
The next big question I always get asked is, well, this is my style when I shoot this. Well, if your style is in the studio, why can't you have the same style outside?
Oh.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Burner.
Yeah.
So, you know,
probably in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. So, you know, people look at your work. I've had people look at my work and go, that's a Craig Stidham, but that's a Craig Stidham image, you know, just by the way that it's polished and finished out, you know. That I think is more the art style and not necessarily like the barroom talk of that's my style. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, for instance, you know, like Renoir has a style and, you know, Van Gogh had a style, you know, all of them, if you ever walk the Louvre, had a style. You can tell basically the era, time period, and, you know, what they painted and how they did it and their techniques and all that based on their art style. And being an artist, you know, whether I shoot something outside, inside, with a ton of gear, with absolutely no gear, hopefully, you know, when it's all polished and presented, people go, yep, Craig did that.
Wow. So along those same lines,
okay,
along the same lines of that, you know, we've had conversations with other photographers, even fashion photographers, and I feel that with the current generation, and I'm not singling out a particular genre of kids, millennials, Gen Xers, or whatever the case may be, it seems like I think that you have a good point in that you shouldn't substitute quality for style.
No, no.
I see a lot of the images in W Magazine, which I was told years ago, hey, if you want to see what current trends are in fashion, follow W Magazine. And I am seeing what, at least for me, I would not create that shitty work. And somebody's paying good dollars for that out of focus, can't tell the product from anything, and they're putting us in the magazine.
Yeah, so here's the other side of that coin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Did that image provoke something, provoke an emotion? And was that image done in a way that made you stop?
Oh, it made me stop.
So they paid, then it doesn't matter. My point being to that whole thing is that campaign was successful.
Correct. There was communication. It made me talk about that ad.
And I bet you money, you were like, this image is so crappy. Who paid for this? And you look down and it's like Louis Vuitton. And you're like, what? Bam. It worked. Bottom line, Louis Vuitton just put there in front. You didn't pass the page. You didn't just go skip, skip, skip. You went in New York. What? What the hell? Louis Vuitton? Bam. Their money was just well spent.
Yeah, but I mean, I really.
It doesn't matter. Their money was spent.
Their money was spent. It worked on me.
It worked on it. That's, you know, sometimes art directors will come to us and they'll tell us like, hey, is there any way you can make that a bit more out of focus? I'm like, well, if I did that, the whole thing would be out of focus. And they're like, I know. Yes, ma'am. Cash the check. It's not my job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand. Beauty's in the eye of the checkbook holder.
Basically, they're like, can you make this more unpolished?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've got that before. We really love your work, but can we just not send it to whoever you send to retouch? Can we just leave it in the raw state? You know, it's a little too clean, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the other thing. Don't take offense to your work, but don't take offense to your work. In other words, like, you can be emotionally attached to it. And if you're going to be emotionally attached to your work and like life or death and everything's like, oh my God, this is my work and they insulted it, call that a personal project. Yeah. If it's a personal project, then I did it this way because this is the way I did it. That's a personal project. If you're doing it for a commercial, you are part of the team that helped create that. So it's a team effort. It's, you know, it's the World Series game 7 right there. You know what I mean? You could have all these visions and the art director tells the hairstylist they want, you know, a big one piece of hair going across the middle of their face. And that bothers the hell out of you. But hey, if that's what she said and hair goes, yes, ma'am. You as a photographer go, yes, ma'am. And you know, hair goes in her face. If makeup is like and you've seen this here lately in some of the ads where they have a great beauty shot and then the model's taking her thumb and like smearing lipstick across her cheek.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's not a personal favorite of mine, but you know what? If I'm hired to do a lipstick campaign and the art director says, we really want you to smear it. And then that's the image they pick. Makeup. I've had my makeup artist go, man, they destroyed my job. You know, like I did all that beautiful work and they picked that one. It doesn't matter. I'm cashing the check and I'm moving on to the next job. The client's happy. The art director's happy. You get another phone call. It's commercial work is a team sport, not an individual sport.
Yeah, you're not creating an art piece that you're going to try to sell at a art gallery. It's
no, that's somebody a personal else's, project.
Yeah, yes. Somebody else's project. You know, you're just there to do what you do, and then, like you said, team effort.
Yeah, and you know what? This if you're a regular everyday photographer or a senior photographer and you're listening in, you know, this theory goes in that same boat too. And, you know, talk about an eye-opener. Let's just take senior pictures, for instance. And if you're the photographer and you shoot and then you get back and you're trying to make a sale and you only sold two images and they're like, man, what the heck, right? Were you doing that because you were the person in charge? Where I shoot tethered, so if I'm going to shoot, like, I'm going to shoot red shirt and blue jeans, and then I have a hot, swanky black dress. Well, I'm going to shoot red t-shirt and blue jeans, and I'm going to take a few images, and then I'm going to stop, and I'm going to ask the physical client, what's your opinion? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then that client's going to look at it and go, okay, well, I think I look fat. And you go, why? And well, you can look back and it's your job to go, well, you're square. Let's turn you at an angle and maybe short light it. Click, click, click. Now, what do you think? Oh my God, I freaking love that. It might not be your personal favorite, but you know what? I just created a sellable image and now I can move on to black swanky dress, you know?
Yeah, I do that exact thing with headshots. I have an iPad I'm shooting to direct to my iPad and I stop midway to try to see, are we on the right track here? Are we going where you want to go? And
your sales are gone up, haven't they?
Oh, well, they've already paid. It's I don't have any upsells, but I do.
Your clients, so yeah, absolutely. There you go, then.
Absolutely, I mean, yeah.
If you're making them happy, then
yeah. That,
but the point is, it's a team. 90% of photography is a team effort.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's been a big hit too. That tethered direct to the iPad.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm on location, they just love it.
So. Right. I'm a firm believer that if you're not tethering, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
It's true. I mean, when I shoot a senior, if I can get a job where I have to travel and be gone for a few weeks, and it doesn't make mama very happy when, you know, you shot a job 3 weeks later, she's finally starting to come look at her pictures. Keep in mind, for me, seniors is a second business, not a first business, you know?
Yeah.
And my commercial work, I'll cash that commercial check before I cash a senior check, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so by that means, and the power of Capture One, I'll shoot a senior and I'll turn around and sell it right there on the spot.
Now, what are you shooting seniors on location too, or just in your studio?
Yeah. And what, if we shoot on location, I shoot into the iPad.
Are you wireless tethered?
Yeah. Nikon has the, the built-in Wi-Fi.
Are you shooting a 750?
No, the 850.
The 850 has the, okay. It was because I know the 750 has a kick-ass built-in Wi-Fi and it works perfectly with the iPad. I guess the 850 has that as well then.
Right.
Because I use Shuttersnitch. I don't use any other third-party software.
I just use the Nikon software for iPad and it works flawlessly.
Really?
I don't have any problems. Now I have found that if you shoot like RAW plus small JPEG, you get a good iPad image, but you don't get enough resolution to zoom in on the eye. So uh-huh. I've done RAW plus medium JPEG, but like the medium, not medium small or medium large. I don't know. It's a Nikon thing.
So you're shooting live, like they're going right to the iPad as you're shooting?
Yes. When we were in Hawaii, and I shoot on the small iPad for this reason, the regular typical iPad Pro, the uh-huh. smaller one, fits in a Ziploc bag.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I prop it up on the beach and on a rock in the water because it's in a Ziploc bag, and I just shoot away. So it's like right there. I can see it.
Well. You know? My issue right now is I'm shooting Fuji and I want to move to Fuji, but I love the Nikon Wi-Fi. So Fuji right. doesn't currently have that in place. I have rigged it, but my main issue, this is not anything that anybody can change here, or you probably don't have anything to say either, but I've talked to both the developer of this software, the Shuttersnitch, as well as Fuji, and they're both blaming each other. But the file name is being renamed on the iPad. It's very frustrating because if somebody star rates their images and says, I like these, I don't know which ones those are once I get to the computer.
Well, right. Let's ask Craig, well, how are you doing that? Because you're using the Nikon software, so you need to get those images into Capture One. How are you maintaining what are the client's favorites?
So on the Nikon, you can go in and do like a custom name. So all of mine are named CMS and then whatever the Nikon number is. And I did that on purpose because somebody would call me and say like, hey, I need image 22. And I'm like, there's no such image as 22,
mm-hmm.
you know, or hey, I need the number of your image. Well, what number do you need? And I'm like, well, mine all start with a CMS and then it's a 4-digit number. And they're like, okay. And then they give me the number. So that got rid of that confusing part right off the top. But
what are you doing to rate? Does it have a rating in the app?
The Nikon, just has a flag.
Oh, a flag. Okay.
Yeah. And so, with the Nikon software, you can just use, Lightroom Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do all the ratings in Lightroom Mobile. Now Capture One has this really nifty drag and drop for Lightroom. And so I just drag it over and it will, like, for instance, image number one will be the raw high res and image number two would be the medium JPEG that's rated. So I just go through and, you know, if it's a 2-star rate, I select the 2 stars, basically color code those and then flip over to the high res. It's kind of an extra step, but you can see how to transfer the low res into the high res.
But you're talking on the desktop now, though.
Yeah. At this point, I've moved right. over. Right. But at least if you've rated it in the field, I right. can come home and know what it was. So
from Lightroom to Lightroom.
Well, from Lightroom to Capture One.
Okay, so the Lightroom app on the iPad, and then it transfers over to Capture One. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
The ratings.
Yeah, you can drag the Lightroom app over to Capture One. Because I don't have Lightroom on my desktop. That would be a waste of space.
Sure.
Whoa.
Yeah, I really hate Lightroom. I mean, wow. You might as well just put that out there, you know?
Okay. All right. I'm actually show notes title.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we've talked to Capture One. I told Capture One, I said, hey, can we get an iPad version of Capture One, like an iPad mobile or something along those lines, so we could do work and an aircraft. And they were like, well, why do you want to do work on the aircraft? And I was like, because it gives me something to do. And I run out of space on the tray table. And the software engineer for Capture One said, then fly first class.
Oh.
Yeah. So I took that as a no.
That would be a hard no.
That would be a hard no. Yeah. Like, we are not even thinking about this right now. Wow. So I really wish they would, but yeah, if you want to run a full size Mac with full size editing and yada yada, and you don't want to run it on your iPad, fly first class.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So anyway,
well, I will say this has been an incredible conversation. I hope the listeners agree. It has for me. We've gone an hour and 15. That's a new record. So,
oh, sorry.
No, I'm not sorry. But it's been good content. So that's how we judge that.
Jim, what we're going to need to do just to make this fair, because, you know, we want to be fair podcasters. So up in the upcoming months, because we're trying to do monthly themes, we should do a theme month on post-processing.
Yes, we absolutely should. That's a great idea.
One, we're going to find somebody that's in Lightroom, interview him on 1 week, and then is there anything else out there for raw converters besides those two?
Oh, yeah. There's several.
I know... that's photo mechanics is just an editor.
Editor. It's just mainly for like,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be pretty good. We should get Craig on here with Capture One and then find somebody that knows Lightroom really good and just let him go at it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's laughing. Well, I think he's liking the idea.
I like the laugh. It was the laugh of, yeah, we'll see about that. Like, I'm going to tear him up.
It all works down to basic principle, we just leave it there because
yeah,
apparently I've already scored on functionality. No, I'm joking. if you guys need to go toe to toe with Lightroom, Semper Fi, you know.
Yeah,
so. I'm for that. I have to say, I have been a Lightroom user ever since beta.
Me and too.
And I didn't have any problems with it. And I, you know, dabbled in Capture One back in when it was like version 7. And it's just like, I didn't want to deal with this learning curve. And then with the Fuji, everyone that I've talked to for the last 5 years has told me the same thing. Like, if you want to make your images look better, you have to use a better raw converter.
I'll tell you this. I'd be willing to do 5 push-ups for every person that legitimately said they like the rendering of Lightroom better than the rendering of Capture One.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So, because every time I can convert a Lightroom person back to Capture One, I always get my images look cleaner. There's not like a haze on them and the color just is better, you know? Now, that might have to be like, I have to call somebody and say, are you downloading the correct profile for your camera? Are you, you know, like, do you really know what you're doing or did you just download it or whatever? And so Capture One kind of agrees with me. And there's a free 30-day trial. You can download a free 30-day trial, full functioning software from Capture One. So why not?
Well, and they just released the new Nikon version too for the free, for the basic.
Actually, it's the Nikon version is nothing new. It's the same as the Pro. It just made it cheaper and they don't have all the other cameras in it.
And you probably can't tether either.
No, you can tether. It's fully functional. It's just like the Capture for Sony. It just, the Nikon version won't have all the like Canon stuff built into it. There's no reason to.
The Fuji free version doesn't tether, right, Robert?
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
I don't think the Fuji free version does. It does not tether. I think the tether has been removed. You have to go to the Fuji Pro version to tether.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I have Capture One Pro myself. I love it, you know? Yeah. And, you know, the upgrade's not that expensive. I mean.
No, it's not. But, you know. Let's wrap up one more question on Capture One because, you know,
all right,
actually some other time. So with Lightroom, one thing I did enjoy, and I haven't researched this, so I don't know the answer. but I'm going to ask you because you're the expert. I use the Color Passport. I think it's from X-Rite.
Mm-hmm.
They have a software to build a custom ICC profile. Because even when I was shooting Nikon, my two D800s did not color match.
Yeah.
Shot a little bit warmer, and the other one shot a little bit yellower.
Yeah, you can totally integrate the Color Monkey software into Capture One. It supports it all.
I am totally doing that this week.
Yeah.
That really made my life a lot easier. You just shoot that color chart under different light conditions at different ISOs. It builds you a special profile, and you just load it in there, and everything comes in nice and clean.
So that normalize that we were talking about earlier in the deal is basically a version of that. So that's why, like, I shoot my gray card.
Uh-huh.
I always shoot my gray card first. And then, like I said, a gray card setting is 128, 128, 128. Mm-hmm. You dial that, hit normalize. Now you can take off the exposure part and just use the white balance part, and you'll get a nice, neutral, clean gray. We use that in all of our fur coats and stuff like that. We'll use the Color Monkey software, but if we've changed the lighting and we're like, I'm not too sure about that, then we just, you know, somebody will jump in with the gray card real fast, shoot it, click it, and then continue on, you know? So the power of that normalize is something that you ought to try first. And then if you need to totally rebuild profiles, you could do that also. But that normalize is pretty powerful. You should try it.
Okay. I'm going to definitely try it. I will try that like right away.
That's yeah. Crazy. And a white, you know, a simple everyday piece of white paper will do the same thing, except for, you know, instead of the 128, it would be 245 would be your numbers. The other big thing to note too, is all 35 millimeter cameras are white balance, where all medium formats are gray balance. So if you're shooting a 35 millimeter digital, it's called white balance for a reason, key term being white. So it's more accurate to shoot a white piece of paper and normalize to 245 than it is to shoot a gray card. Where if you're shooting Phase One or Hasselblad, it's actually called gray balance, not white balance, because it was built for a gray card, not a white card.
Hmm.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never knew that. All the medium format stuff, we always shot a gray card.
Correct. But even like if you just go to, if you get your hands on a new Phase One or a Hasselblad, it won't say white balance. It'll say gray balance.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever shot I shot the medium format Fuji just at a show, but I've never shot a medium format digital camera on a job. Now,
yeah. I had a Phase One camera, medium format, and ended up going back to the Nikon because I had the Mamiya Phase One, the Mamiya body, Phase One back Mamiya body. I didn't have any problems with the back. The Mamiya autofocus was just so slow. Like if you had a model, you know, like stepping to the left and doing a pose, or, you know, something like Cucaracha would do it, the autofocus just had a very difficult time keeping up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Those autofocus in the medium format, I mean, you're having to drive a big chunk of glass and you got to do
it. But it was just slow. I mean, even for the technology, you were like, oh my God, are you kidding me? You know? So I just went back to the 850. The 810, the Nikon 810 and the Nikon 850 were the first 35 millimeters without the high pass function. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got that medium format look with a 35, you know?
Yes, yes. I think that I had the Nikon, the 800E.
Yeah, that was the the A was the astronomy one.
Right. The E had, I'm not sure if it was the high pass, but they changed out the glass in front of the sensor.
Yeah. So that no pass filter is, it gives you that medium format look. Cause I can pull up a current Nikon image and an older Phase One image, and it would be really tough to tell the difference.
Oh
yeah. So,
well, all right. You have an absolute wealth of information.
Yeah.
I've just been doing it for a long time, but thanks for having me. I know I got to go. We can talk all night, but
well, we're going to close out, and after, just stick around. We'll chat okay. for briefly after because I've got a question. But
no worries.
Yeah. Is it a
capture one?
It is.
Go ahead and chalk one up for Craig. You have
that's right.
Felder.
So I have the Capture One website up right now, so I'm going to have a question. So, yeah, so it's been incredible. I hope the listeners got some stuff out of this. So, Craig, real quick, tell us, again, where to find you. We'll put it in the show notes, but just for the listeners that maybe don't want to see the website or go to our website, whatever, tell us where they can find you.
So I'm online on the web, www.craigstidham.com. Instagram is Craig Stidham. No Facebook, don't even bother.
I just love that. That has to be the title. The no Facebook.
Don't bother.
Yeah. Facebook, no bother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Instagram, the web, I'm always there. We do a workshop in May, for all skill levels of photography, newbies to seasoned people. We bring in some of the industry's just coolest freaking people on the planet, people who are willing to spend all night with a beer and just give you their knowledge. So they're all price affordable. We do those every May. We start in January with pre-sales and go from there. We keep it pretty intimate, 20, 25 people. We spend a full day out on location working West Texas sun. And I always tell people, if you can shoot in West Texas sunlight, you can shoot anywhere. And then we spend a whole another day in a studio environment. We do have a little bit of classroom environment. Most of all, it's all family environment. We bring in agency models. We also bring in rookie models. Kim is our hair makeup. She's a full-length movie-featured makeup artist. And we have a full-length featured movie hairstylist that we work with. So we can get some polished looks, some odd stuff if that's what we're after. But anyway, the May workshops, they're usually hover anywhere, depending on who we bring in and who I have to pay. But usually average ticket sales are about $900 to $1,200. And we cater in from a real chef, so we all eat good. It's amazing. So online and workshops, I do online. You can also find my books are there, and I've got some retouching actions that are there. And obviously, if you need to hook up and do some mentoring, obviously we do that too. So
okay, yep. So we get the F1 key action for Photoshop to make those really cool Instagram.
What?
Yeah. Well, if anybody buys my retouching workshop, all my Instagram stuff's there.
Shit. Yeah. That's what I'll. Terry, yeah. I need something. Wow. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Craig. We really appreciate it. Any chance Melissa's going to be there next year?
Melissa, my workshop?
Yeah.
Oh, Melissa Rodwell at my workshop. I haven't actually reached out to her. I have a funny feeling her speaker contract is probably out of my budget, but I would love to.
we'll talk to her.
Yeah. I want to bring Steve Ellinger to our workshop. If you guys don't know him, he's an amazing guy that works with Buku Agency. So if you ever want to get into working with agencies and stuff, Steve Ellinger is the guy. I've already mentioned to hit him a few times. He's like, if I smoke a brisket, he's here. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, we've got good people in our workshops. Something for everybody. Nobody goes away hungry. So,
cool. God,
awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you so much. Stick around after we sign off and we'll chit chat and get a couple more questions answered. Listeners, thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast with Craig. Wealth of information, and be sure to go check out Capture One. We'll put show notes in here in case you decide to read them, and we have more fashion coming soon.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.